Your financial choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Your Financial Choices. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I am a CPA, CFP professional, and AEP at yourfinancialchoices.com, and you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org. Programs from prior shows are also available under the tab for public affairs. Today is May 20th, 2020. We are talking tonight about document retention, what you keep, for how long, and where, and a little bit more about that and why that's important about document retention. This show is pre-recorded this evening. If you have questions, you may email us at yourfinancialchoices.com. And the questions can be on any financial topic or show ideas. If you'd like to hear more about a particular topic, we welcome ideas from our listeners, so we really appreciate that. And again, that's through yourfinancialchoices.com. So welcome back to another week of Your Financial Choices from Home. A big thank you again to all the people out there whose jobs are helping our communities and all you do. We really thank you for your support. It seems that people have had more time on their hands and have been taking the time to clean out old photographs and old papers. I hear people saying, oh, it's wonderful, I'm going through all this. People are texting me pictures of our younger days, and it's been wonderful going down some of that memory lane. But people are also talking about cleaning up old papers. So I thought it would be worthwhile to talk about, and including document retention and how you save or store your records. So first, I want to touch, before I move to, you know, papers, I do want to just mention about personal property, because people think about old photographs, that's not really a big deal. But what if you have old furniture or old cars or old memorabilia? You might want to take stock of what you have, because I've heard stories where, you know, Grandpa had old baseball cards up in the attic and, you know, it was in a dirty box and they got thrown away and no one's the wiser of what they might have been worth. So while you might have junk laying around, it is still a great idea to clean out, but just be careful that you're not throwing out valuables. Sports memorabilia sometimes has a lot of value. Music memorabilia may have some value. And if you're not sure of what might be of value, you can contact an auction house. There's auction houses, you know, or auction houses, I guess, even in our area, and you can Google that and find out. And if there is a particular collection that perhaps a family member had, you can find out if it needs to be appraised, if there is a specific market for that and where that is. It may not be in our area, but it might be in another area, another part of the country even, maybe selling it online. So just make sure before you start tossing things out that you're also paying attention to some of that memorabilia that you might have around the house. So now when we're talking about papers, what kind of papers might you have laying around? What should you keep? Why should you keep them? And then maybe a little bit about, you know, how we store papers. The most obvious and what I get the most questions about are tax returns. I guess people ask me that because I'm a CPA. But I want to add to that list. It's not just tax returns we have to pay attention to when we're talking about document retention and keeping track of certain paperwork. I would add to that home ownership papers, investment statements, estate planning documents, divorce papers, marriage certificates, birth certificates, utility bills maybe. My husband keeps piles of those, credit card statements. So there's a whole variety of papers that we find that people keep or retain, and how long are they hanging on to them and why. So we'll break that down a little bit into financial types of documents and then what I'm going to call kind of life-related documents. So first, financial. And I'm going to assume that we're talking about paper, you know, for the most part of the show when I'm talking about this. Obviously, some of this would relate if you're keeping things digitally as well, as to how long you would keep it even if it was digital, because even our electronic files get bogged down and clogged up, so you probably don't want to keep that information longer than usual either. But it's not as apparent or in our face when it's on our computer as it is when we have stacks of documents laying around, or file folders, or tubs of papers, or file cabinets. So I'm going to kind of focus on assuming it's paper at this point. So let's start with the easiest, which I think is the easiest, which would be bills that we're paying. Essentially, like utility bills, credit card bills, things like that, for personal expenditures. After you've, you know, checked your bills and made sure, you know, the prior bill was, everything was paid and that kind of thing, I generally wouldn't think that you would have to keep these beyond a year. So the reason I know my husband has it in his head about utility bills is he's always said if you ever go to sell your house, generally a buyer would want to see your utility bills. Well, that's fine, but you only need maybe a year of that. You wouldn't need 10 years of utility bills to show a new buyer. And how often are we selling our house? You know, we've been in our house 22 years with no plans to sell. So I really think, you know, utility bills, after a year, you probably really don't need to hang on to them. Credit card statements, if you're reviewing it regularly, reviewing it monthly, just, you know, for the most part, we eyeball it to kind of make sure all the charges look reasonable and expected. And you should do that, absolutely review them. Some people trace their receipts to their credit card statements. You know, I don't have time to do that. I can usually kind of eyeball it fairly well. But credit card statements, for the most part, after a year, I'm not sure I would keep those either. And now, recall that I had said it when I started this about personal expenditures. It is a little different if you have a business and you're running expenses through a business on your credit card. So I'll talk a little bit more about that when we come back from our first break. And we are talking tonight about document retention, not just how long you keep something or what you keep, but why we keep it. And I think that if we understand the why, it makes more sense as to what we should and shouldn't keep. All right, so we will be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR news and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100, extension 6, or WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. We are talking tonight about document retention. This is a pre-recorded show. If you have questions, you are welcome to send them through the website, yourfinancialchoices.com. I'll do my best to answer those questions via email and share the question on a later show as applicable. So we appreciate our listeners and thank you for all your questions and ideas as we go along. And speaking of questions, we often get questions about how long do we keep documents. And I think if we can kind of categorize it in our head, it makes it easier for us to remember some of this. So we started with the easiest things like utility bills, credit card statements, and I mentioned typically for personal expenditures, for the most part, unless it was for things like an appliance or something that might have a guarantee on it, not sure you really have to keep a lot of those bills. Typically, if you bought it on your credit card, you might have a receipt for it in a drawer. We will usually have a file for appliances and higher-priced items and kind of keep track of those. But for the most part, your little things, just be done with it, get rid of it. Again, and that's usually after a year because for those kind of day-to-day expenses, you don't need to keep that information long. You could rotate the statements if that makes sense. So if you have a file for 12 months, you have January through December, and then the next January, just throw out the old January, put in the new January. That works well, too. Investment statements. People often ask about their investment statements, like do they need to keep them? You can typically rotate these as well. The important item to retain for investments are any trade confirmations for individual stocks and mutual funds, and let me tell you which ones. So it's not necessarily all of them. So you want to keep trade confirmations in particular for individual stocks purchased prior to January 1, 2011. And for mutual funds, any mutual funds you purchased prior to January 1, 2012, if you otherwise don't have that recorded somewhere. So a little background here. Prior to these dates, if you made investment purchases, it was your responsibility to keep track of your cost basis. If you made these purchases through a custodian, they might have kept track for you, but they were not required to keep track of it for you. And they weren't required to report it to the IRS either. They also would not necessarily transfer this information to a new custodian if you moved your account. Okay, so prior to 1-1-2011, custodians were not required to keep this cost basis information. A lot of the custodians were already doing it, but they weren't required to. And especially if you transferred your account to a new custodian, what might have happened is the assets moved over or the positions moved over, which you could move over in kind, but they might not have moved the cost basis information, that historical cost basis information that was, over the life of the investments that you had at that prior custodian. And even then, they don't go back forever. The custodians might have been keeping track of it for you for a while pre-2011, but they might not have kept track of it if you bought it in, 1980 or 1990. I don't know at what point, once probably technology allowed them, they kind of were doing it as like a customer service type of thing, but they didn't have to keep track of it. So you really need to make sure that you keep those records for that, for any purchases that were made prior to January 1, 2011. Now, what you can do in some cases is provide that cost basis information to your custodian, and they can input it into their system. They will code it that it was customer provided. But you could, if you've noticed on your statements that it says cost basis information missing and you know you have it, you could get out that information and provide it to your broker, investment advisor, the custodian, and they can enter it into their system, and then at least it's there in case something happens to you and the kids can't find that paperwork for whatever reason, that you've got it somewhere, all right? So trade confirmations, purchase information for individual stocks and mutual funds pre-January 1, 2011 for stocks and pre-January 1, 2012 for mutual funds. And especially when they transfer it from one broker to the other. Sometimes that does not get transferred. Subsequent to those dates, the custodian is required to keep that information, and they will report that information to the IRS if you ever sell those positions, individual stocks or mutual funds, from those dates. That gets reported to the IRS, And that is what is called, if you've ever noticed on a tax document, it'll say covered sales, and then there's non-covered sales. That's what they're talking about. If it's a covered sale, it was something that you purchased post 1/1/2011 for individual stocks and post 1/1/2012 for mutual funds. So that is the difference. So you'll see sometimes covered for short-term, covered for long-term, and then for those positions that had an acquisition date pre those dates, they would be considered non-covered. Occasionally, you'll still sometimes see non-covered short-term, and that wouldn't make sense. You'd think, well, gosh, if it's short-term, that's past these dates Lori mentioned, why aren't those covered? Well, sometimes what we see on non-covered reporting on a statement might be something like a treasury bill, a short-term treasury bill, and it's not necessarily sale. It's like a redemption where you have interest that's reported and not really a gain. All right, so watch out for that. So if you have cost basis recorded and you have all the reporting through your custodian, you may be able to shred those statements, I would say, you know, within 3 years. I have some clients who destroy them after a year. They do that rotation and just get rid of them. If you have a brokerage checking on your account, though, you may want to keep those statements for activity that may relate to taxes. So some people use their brokerage account for writing checks, and so that could be important if there was something like estimated tax payments you were paying through your brokerage account, or you know, tax preparation fees, things like that. And also, if it's business-related, you do want to keep a lot of this information much longer. And we'll talk more about why that is when we talk about tax returns and things like that. If you receive separate trade confirmations for purchases since those earlier dates, those should show up on your brokerage statement as well. So once reviewed, I don't see any reason to keep those either. Some people think they need to keep those trade confirmations of when their, you know, advisor buys or sells something. Usually that shows up on your statement, and if it's subsequent to the 1/1/2011 date, it's tracked by the custodian and required to be tracked by them, and that information will continue to follow to any subsequent advisors you work with or custodians you work with. So there's not really a need to keep those trade confirmations as long as you can see it on your statement. So once it shows up on your statement, you make sure that it's there. I wouldn't worry about keeping those either. All right, so investment statements. I think you can, you know, weed those out as you go along. If you're talking about statements from, you know, a few years ago, and you have all covered securities now, wouldn't worry about it. If you have information from non-covered periods, you might want to make sure you have the backup for any of those positions or share that with the custodian so that it gets recorded and that you have that backup in the event, you know, you're ever audited to prove the cost basis that you used on a sale on your tax return. Okay, folks, we are talking about document retention, what you need to keep, how you keep it, and why you might need to keep it. If you have questions, you can send those through the website at yourfinancialchoices.com, and we will be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
This is Operations Director Neil Heaver. Healthcare workers around the nation are bravely battling the COVID-19 virus, and we all need to do our part to help. Many of the real voices you know at WDIY will be absent this spring as they heed the call to stay home and stay safe. Our staff and volunteers have faced challenges before, and I'm certain we'll get through this crisis. We'll continue to provide NPR news and a variety of music, and we will bring the many choices and real voices back as soon as possible. Our best wishes to you and your loved ones, and thank you for listening and supporting us at WDIY, Lehigh Valley Public Radio.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert, and you're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. And you can also listen online at WDIY.org. www.publicaffairs.org and to prior shows under the Public Affairs tab. We are talking tonight about document retention. And when I first was thinking about doing this show, I thought, oh, this is a little boring. But, you know, I realize I get so many questions about it. And I thought, well, maybe we need to kind of delve deeper into talking about this and why it's important and what you have to keep. You know, I'm one of the fortunate people who gets to work from home, so I don't have a lot of time to clean out my cabinets and papers, thank God. But some people, if they are, you know, have a more flexible schedule, seem to be really taking advantage of that this opportunity to kind of take care of their own business and cleaning out files. So it's wonderful, but this is just kind of a caution of what you need to be careful of keeping or not keeping. And it's always good to get rid of excess paper for sure. Just be mindful of what you do. And it could seem like a daunting task, so I would suggest you just do one piece at a time. You could do just the pile of tax returns or the pile of brokerage statements or the pile of, you know, your children's drawings from kindergarten. So just take one chunk at a time. One thing that, another question we get often is about home purchases, and should people keep that anymore? A lot of people know that if you have lived and owned a home at least 2 out of 5 years, that if you sell your home, you don't have to report it, and you don't have to recognize the gain on it if you're single and the gain is less than $250,000, or if you're married, filing joint, and the gain is less than $500,000. So many of us don't have those kinds of gains. So you might kind of think, well, why do I have to keep track of this? Because we don't have to report these gains anymore. Well, because you never know, and this is one of the largest purchases you'll ever make in your life. So there's definitely still reason to keep this paperwork. And what kind of paperwork do we want to keep when we're talking about home purchases? The settlement sheet, or the HUD statement, they call it, H-U-D, HUD statement, or I just call it the settlement sheet. It's that two-columned kind of piece of paper you get when you're either buying or selling your home. So you want to keep the settlement sheet. It shows how much you paid for the home. It also shows those settlement charges that add to the cost basis of your property. And you want to keep that until you eventually sell. And then when you sell, you want to keep that settlement sheet as well. So you're going to have a buyer's settlement sheet and a seller's settlement sheet. And I would say you'd want to keep that for at least 3 years. You should also keep receipts for major home improvements that add to the cost basis of the home. You don't need to keep the receipts for repairs and maintenance unless it's a, you know, a contract or something like that, but you would want to still keep the receipts for major home improvements. And why would you want to keep the settlement sheets and the home improvements? Well, a couple reasons. One, when you're buying or selling a home, quite often there's an allocation of real estate taxes. And for people who still itemize, that may be important. You'd have to know how much in real estate taxes you paid at settlement or how much was refunded to you at settlement. So we look to the settlement sheets for that. There have been many times where people have converted their homes to rentals. So you don't know when that's going to happen. If you buy your house in, you know, the year 2005 and you live in it for 15 years and all of a sudden in 2020 you get a new job that's going to take you to Ohio, well, maybe you still wish and hope that you'd be able to come back to Pennsylvania. So in the meantime, you might decide, hey, why don't I just rent out the house for a few years, see how it goes, see if this job works out in Ohio. Well, if you're going to go rent your house, you have to know what you paid for your house, because as an accountant, we're very interested in what value do we use in depreciating your property if we're renting it. And we depreciate property based on the lower of cost or market. So quite often, the market is higher than the cost generally. So if you were to leave your home today and your house is worth $200,000 and you paid, you know, $100,000 for it back in 2005, it's the lower of cost of market that we have to depreciate it at. And so you might bring your papers in to me. I want to see that settlement sheet. I see that you paid $100,000 for it. I would tell you that's what I would have to depreciate the house at. But you say, hey, Lori, but we added on a sun porch, and we added on an extra bedroom, and we did, you know, $50,000 of landscaping. That's all very important information because that would add to the cost basis. So now instead of depreciating the house at what was shown on the settlement sheet of $100,000, I might add $50,000 of improvements. So the lower of cost or market comparison would be $150,000 versus $200,000. So you never know when that's going to be important. So that is definitely one file I would keep for sure in your file cabinet, and that's one titled Home. And you want to keep your settlement sheet in there, and again, any major improvements. The simple things like repairs and maintenance and painting a bedroom and putting in a little rug or something, that's not going to be a major improvement. That's just repairs and maintenance and things like that. So keep track of the major things. So keep that in a drawer. That's very important. We also have insurance policies, home, auto, life, disability. You want to make sure you keep those safe somewhere. And even just beyond having them like in a drawer, have it inventoried somewhere. Have it on your computer somewhere or a separate notebook where you can access it quickly, because in the event you need insurance, it's usually in an emergency, something has happened. You want to be able to get to that information quickly, because we don't always keep quick access to things like that. We might keep quick access to our investment statements or to our tax information, but might have to rifle through the drawer to find that file on the, the homeowner's insurance or the auto insurance. Not sure how your bookkeeping or your safekeeping is, but kind of have a system that you can get to it quickly. But if you don't, make sure that you have a list of it somewhere. Or if something happens in the house and you have it electronically, maybe that you could access it, you know, via your phone or computer, wherever you might be able to have a storage for that. So insurance, because you want to make sure that you'll quickly be able to tap your insurance agent, their phone number, and know what kind of coverage you would have if something happened, what kind of deductible you might have on your homeowners if something happens, or your car insurance. So keep that information handy. Keep those declaration pages handy. Typically what I would do for that is also you could rotate those. So maybe keep your policy in your drawer for, you know, obviously they're usually like annual policies, so maybe keep a couple years, but then discard them over time. And use common sense if you have some special situation, keep it if that would apply. But for the most part, most of us, we can rotate those kinds of insurance policies out as well. Folks, we are at the halfway point of the show. This is a pre-recorded show, but if you have questions, you can certainly send them through the website at yourfinancialchoices.com, and we really appreciate those. You are listening to Your Financial Choices, and we will be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Have you ever heard an idea that changed the way you look at the world?
Everything we think,
we've
feel.
Had to believe in impossible
infinite
things.
Infinite possibility and that sense of potential. And, I
and we've
that
had to refuse
persist.
To fear failure.
You've got to persist through failure.
You can contemplate the meaning of infinity.
I'm Guy Raz. Join me each week for Ideas Worth Spreading on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
Friday nights at 6 o'clock, following All Things Considered on WDIY.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert, and you are listening to Your Financial Choices. Tonight we're talking about document retention, what kind of documents we're talking about, how do you retain them, what should you keep, and why should you keep them. Now we're moving on to the most often asked question, tax returns, how long do I have to keep them? And generally, I have to tell you, I often tell people, well, I keep them forever. But realistically, you don't necessarily have to keep them forever. And so I decided to go to the source. And you'll see why I sometimes say keep them forever when I read what it says on the IRS's website. So from the IRS's website, they say the length of time you should keep a document depends on the action, expense, or event which the document records. Generally, you must keep your records that support an item of income, deduction, or credit shown on your tax return until the period of limitations for that tax return runs out. So the period of limitations is the period of time in which you can amend your tax return to claim a credit or refund, or the IRS can assess additional tax. That's the most important thing to think about right there. The IRS can assess additional tax. Unless otherwise stated, the years refer to the period after the return was filed. Returns filed before the due date are treated as filed on the due date. So when we talk about how long you have to hold or keep tax returns, if you filed February 15th and they tell you you have to keep it 3 years, February 15th of 2020, it's not February 15th of 2023. It would be April 15th of 2023. Well, in this case, this year, because the filing deadline was to July 15th of 2020, I'm thinking 3 years might be July 15th of 2023. Okay, so got to keep all these things in mind. So you want to keep copies of your filed returns, and obviously they help in preparing future tax returns. If you go to a new preparer, the first question they should ask you is bring in a copy of your prior year tax return. A preparer really must always look at the prior year tax return. We're looking for, you know, carryovers and consistency and making sure that we're catching all the income or and or deductions that you've taken in the prior year. So you always want to keep a copy of your tax return. I had a client who told me he had it on his computer and the computer completely crashed and he could not retrieve a copy of his tax return. Now, you can write to the IRS to get a transcript of your tax return, but it's not always the exact copy. And in this situation, we wanted to know what the Schedule D sales were. That is when you're selling stock and mutual funds. That's reported on a Schedule D because the transcript only showed the capital loss carryover of not the full capital loss carryover, it just showed $3,000 capital loss. So the transcript for the year just showed the capital loss of $3,000. It didn't tell us the activity during 2018. So the client had to go retrieve the tax documents from the 2018 tax return so that we could recreate what gains and losses they had and how much of the capital loss carryover they used. All right, so they don't always have all the information that you want. So it's good to, if you use a preparer, the preparers usually are required to keep a copy of your tax return. So that's kind of like a safety net for you. All right, so the period of limitations that apply to income tax returns. Number one, keep records for 3 years if situations 4, 5, and 6 below do not apply to you. So we're going to talk about what those are. So they say basically keep records for 3 years. Well, that sounds good, but I've seen a lot of times where that is not the case. Number two, keep records for 3 years from the date you filed your original return or 2 years from the date you paid the tax, whichever is later, if you file a claim for credit or refund after you file your return. So keep your records for 3 years from the date you filed your original return. So if you let's say, didn't file your 2018 return in the normal course of business, let's say your 2018 return would have been due April 15th of 2019, and you didn't file it until January of 2020. That's what they're talking about. So you want to keep it for 2 years from the date you filed your original return, or 2 years from the date you paid the tax, whichever is later. Number three, keep records for 7 years if you file a claim for a loss from worthless securities or bad debt deductions. So this doesn't come up that often, but it could be material. And what the IRS is saying, if you're taking a deduction for a worthless security, that garners a little bit more attention on their part, and that's why you need to keep your records for 7 years, because they have a longer time to come back and review your tax return. So that's for worthless securities or bad debt deductions. There was a period of time, you know, several years ago, when it seemed like there were a number of companies that were going bankrupt and we had worthless securities and we were reporting for clients. If you paid, you know, $5,000 for something and it became worthless, and it has to be, you know, that's part of the trouble trying to figure out, was it actually deemed worthless, and how is a company actually, you know, deemed worthless so that you could take the deduction on your tax return. But if you had a cost of in that worthless stock of $5,000, you can take that as a loss on your tax return. You didn't get any money for it because it was worthless. You get a $5,000 loss. That's when you have to keep the tax records for 7 years. Number four, keep records for 6 years if you do not report income that you should report, and it's more than 25% of the gross income shown on your return. So this starts to fall in under negligence. So if the IRS thinks you've been negligent in filing your tax return, they can go back 6 years. So here again, when do we know that we might be considered to have filed a negligent return? What if we totally just missed something, made a mistake? If it's more than 25% of the gross income in your return that you forgot to file, like, whoops, missed that, didn't see that, the IRS can go back 6 years. So you want to make sure you're keeping your records, I would say, for at least 6 years just because of that. Number five, keep records indefinitely if you do not file a return. So here it's not about keeping the tax return. And in most of these cases that we're talking about, when I'm talking about how long you keep a copy of your tax return, it's actually the records to support your tax return that we're talking about, not just the copy of your tax return, but the records that support the numbers on the tax return. So if you're not filing a tax return, do, in fact, keep your records indefinitely, because the IRS can come back indefinitely if you should have been filing and you did not. Number six, keep records indefinitely if you file a fraudulent return. So you heard me say earlier, keep records for 6 years if you didn't report some income, and if that income is 25% of the gross, more than 25% of the gross income on the return. That, I said, was negligence, and they could go back 6 years. Fraudulent returns, they can go back forever. So here's what I've kind of always said, too. Well, how do you know if the IRS is going to ever say if you were fraudulent or not? I would say for most of us, if we're W-2 employees and we report our bank interest and we report our dividends, or, you know, maybe eventually get Social Security and a pension, if it's just general things like that, for the most part, you're probably going to be okay and could definitely follow the guidelines for the 3 year situation. If you're a business owner, maybe even a landlord with rental properties, these are definitely the returns that I would keep the records for much longer. Okay? Keep employment tax records for at least 4 years after the date that the tax becomes due or is paid, whichever is later. So employment tax records, that was interesting. I don't know why that would be 4 years when the tax return records, the records for tax returns generally is 3 years, but keep employment tax records. personally, I would hope that my employer, I could go back to my employer and get that information. Other than saving, you know, the W-2s, most of that information is, you know, recorded and submitted to the IRS by your employer. So other employment tax records might relate to if you're self-employed, things like that, definitely keep a little longer. So they also offered some questions which should be applied to each record as you decide whether to keep a document or throw it away. Again, this is from the IRS website. Regular listeners know I love government websites because it's free information and someone's done the work for us. And it's, for the most part, quite informative. So generally, keep records relating to property until the period of limitations expires for the year in which you dispose of the property. You must keep these records to figure any depreciation, amortization, or depletion deduction, and to figure the gain or loss when you sell or otherwise dispose of the property. So remember, I said earlier, what if you had a house and you decided to move and then rent that property? I said keep the settlement sheets, keep the home improvement information. You will need that, and right here that supports that statement. If you receive property in a non-taxable exchange, and most, you know, this you see very, very rarely where someone does a non-taxable exchange, 1035 exchange for property, your basis in that property is the same as the basis of the property you gave up, increased by any money you paid, so you must keep the records of the old property as well as the new property until the period of limitations expires for the year in which you dispose of the new property. What should I do with my records for non-tax purposes? When your records are no longer needed for tax purposes, do not discard them until you check to see if you have to keep them longer for other purposes. And I kept this in here because I thought this was important, and I thought it was good that the IRS mentioned it. And they said, for example, your insurance company or creditors may require you to keep them longer than the IRS does. Now, we have good friends that we just talked to in Michigan, and his mother had just passed away. His father had passed away probably 30 years ago, and his father had had a business, and that business was sold to someone, sold to someone, sold to someone, and is now owned by a company that, if I said it, we would all know the name. Well, they're going back and looking at liability insurance that his father might have had on his business for a claim someone is making against this new company. It's just so fascinating to think that someone could make a claim for something from so far ago, you know, such a long time ago, and it still could come back to you, and, you know, the man has been gone for, you know, 30 years. So be careful about certain records that you'd want to keep, even outside just the tax records. Just because you sell the business doesn't mean that you don't want to continue to retain some of those records. And it probably wouldn't hurt to have them electronically as well as we kind of move around and, you know, retire and move to different homes and that type of thing, downsize, throwing papers away without even realizing what we're throwing away. You want to keep that type of documents maybe in paper and in digital form. We're at our last break. When we come back, I'm going to talk a little bit then about some other reasons why we want to keep records relating to businesses, and then move on to kind of the life documents that we have, and then a little bit about storage and why you want to be a little bit careful with those. So if you have questions, you can send those through the website, yourfinancialchoices.com. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
WDIY Lehigh Valley Public Radio is committed to our listeners' health and safety during the COVID-19 outbreak. Help us stop coronavirus. Lehigh Valley residents can do the five. Wash your hands for 20 seconds. Stay home unless absolutely necessary. Cover your face if you have to go out. Stay 6 feet apart of social distance. Feel sick? Contact medical professionals for next steps. For coronavirus updates and information, go to WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices, and we are talking about document retention tonight. What kind of documents, how we keep them, what should we keep, and why we should keep them. And I think that's the most important and overriding guideline here is if there's a why, and maybe you need to keep them if there's a reason, not just because, I might need that utility bill in 3 years, but is there a valid tax or business reason to retain documents? So if you have, if you ever had a business, you might have a carryover loss from that business. You might have a net operating loss carryover. If you sold a business, 20 years ago and on your tax return you have a loss and it's continuing to carry forward, because typically, folks, if you have a loss, the IRS lets us use our losses first against other gains on our Schedule D, and to the extent the loss exceeds those gains, they let us use $3,000 against ordinary income on page one, but anything more than that, we have to carry forward, and we can carry it forward indefinitely. Well, if I have a loss that I've been carrying over for, 30 years, and I get audited, the IRS can make us go back to that original loss from 30 years ago to prove what that loss was and, how it came about. So you definitely want to keep that kind of information. Anything that on your tax return was generated from a prior period, you want to keep that information. All right? So now let's talk a little bit about some of the life documents we have, things like marriage and birth certificates, divorce decrees. Those serve as identity documentation for various reasons. You definitely want to keep marriage and birth certificates and divorce decrees. You might think, why? It would be the first thing I might want to throw out is a divorce decree. No, there's reasons you want to keep that. So the marriage and birth certificate, we see those used for passports, for name changes, maybe even marriage licenses, real ID applications. If you get married and you change your name, maybe at a later time you want to change your name back after the marriage went sour. You really want to keep these documents secure and really, keep them for your lifetime. Our state's vital records usually would have copies of these, so I think if you lose them, there is a way to get them, but it is probably a little bit more complicated than anyone wants to deal with, and so it's best to kind of keep those in a safe place. People in the old days, I think they used to have safe deposit boxes all the time at banks. You'd hear people have them, and they'd pay for these safe deposit boxes to keep their documents secure. People still use those, but I definitely don't seem to hear about it as much as we used to. And I don't know if that's because more and more people can, buy safes for their home and store these documents. And really, the point of the safe is not so much that someone's going to come steal it. It's more about protecting it in the event of a disaster, if there was a flood or a fire or something like that. So you want those documents to be kept somewhere safe, and it might be purchasing, a small safe from, one of the department stores or big chain box stores, a safe where you can put some of these documents securely that would be fireproof and that type of thing. The divorce decree, as I mentioned, that might be important. It could be the settlement agreement from a divorce. You want to keep those because sometimes there's ongoing circumstances that you might need to reference back to relating to a divorce, a separation of property, to pensions or property that wasn't readily handled at the time of the divorce. Maybe the couple has agreed to, hold on to a piece of property until they settle, and so the divorce goes through, but there might be still some language about what happens to a piece of real estate or a lot or something like that that you sell later. So keep that information. It also could be important If you are going to go file for Social Security, if you have not remarried, you were married at least 10 years to your former spouse, you may be able to collect on their work record, their Social Security record, and it may be a better benefit than you would have on your own record. Well, if you go to file for Social Security, they're going to want to know, you know, who your spouse was, and you might have more than one that you could file on. So you want to retain that information and their Social Security numbers of any former spouses as well. Estate planning documents, if you don't have them, get them. So if in your cleaning up, if you don't see that you have an estate planning file and you don't have a will, make sure you go do that, especially, you know, as this pandemic has demonstrated, you never know what might happen. And people could be making medical decisions for you, and it could be anyone. And wouldn't you rather designate and choose and appoint the person that you want to serve as your healthcare agent? So that's part of estate planning documents. You go see your attorney. They'll talk with you about your wishes and desires. It's not as scary as you think, and you can have your will. And you can have your health care power of attorney and a durable power of attorney in case anything happens to you and someone has to make financial decisions for you as well. Very important documents to have. And that's even outside of, you know, kind of taking estate planning into your own hands, which a lot of people are doing these days, and at least it's something. So I'm not going to argue with that if you have done some estate planning where you have done it through joint asset titling or beneficiary designations on your retirement accounts. Some people will put transfer on death designations or payable on death designations on certain types of assets that they might have. That's great, and sometimes people then think they don't need to have a will. Well, if you miss something, it's really important to still have, you know, estate planning documents so that your wishes will be followed. But particularly important for while we're still alive and on this earth, we want to appoint someone in the event we are not capable of making decisions for ourselves, either financially or for health care. So estate planning documents, you want to make sure that you have those, and you want to make sure they're in a very secure and safe place, and I'll talk more about that in just a minute. So how do we store all these documents? So I've been talking in general about paper, and that's one of the reasons we go through this cleanup, because we're trying to clean up the clutter. But that clutter can also occur on our computers and our digital files. As I mentioned earlier, I had a client who his whole computer crashed, and boom, gone. So then you could swing the other way and say, gosh, I thought I was being careful having everything digital. Now maybe I want everything paper because the digital stuff can disappear too. Well, maybe you need to do a little bit of both. So make sure you have backup for anything that you've saved electronically. And I think that people probably are very negligent in doing that. We get so used to being at work where we might have departments that do automatic backups for us and our information is saved or it's on the cloud and we don't worry about it so much, but we kind of forget about doing that at home. So if you have a computer, personal computer, you want to make sure that you do backups regularly to keep that information safe. And if you have paper copies, you know, have those in a secure place as well. What I was going to say as to the estate planning documents, typically, too, your attorney would keep a copy of your estate documents. And so if you went to an attorney and the attorney keeps a copy or even the originals, because sometimes they will keep the originals, you want to make sure that your family knows about that, because don't make an assumption that your family knows this mysterious attorney. I've seen so often families don't talk about estate planning with their kids or their family members or who they might name as their representative. They're kind of hush-hush about it. Don't want anybody to know. Well, if they don't know, then how are they going to know which attorney to go to if something happens, you know, and your house burns down? So make sure that you've communicated that to the people that really need to know that in the event something happens to you. Investment statements and trades and most cost basis, again, that should be accessible by your broker. But if we're talking about those, remember the securities you might have purchased pre-2011, pre-2012, and your broker doesn't have that cost basis information and you have it stuffed somewhere, well, get it out. Make sure you get that documented somewhere. Maybe you still hold the securities and it's not held at a custodian. Well, maybe this is the time to have your positions held at a custodian. We call that, you know, being held in street name. And then you're not losing the securities. You're not losing the dividend checks. Sometimes dividend checks don't get cashed, and then it goes to the state. So, you know, kind of review as you get older. Does it make sense for you to keep piling up this paper and tracking all of this information? Because at some point, we're just not as clear as we used to be. And we start to lose some, you know, mental capacity. It becomes diminished, and we may not be able to remember which drawer we put that paper in. So kind of get this all together and organize it. But for the most part, if you are working with a broker or a custodian, you hopefully could rely on them to provide some of that information should you ever lose it for, again, the statements, trade confirmations, cost basis, that type of thing. But recognize they can't go back forever, and they certainly can't go back and create something that you never gave them the information on. They would only have what would have occurred during the time they were working with you, or that would have been transferred under these covered securities provisions. They don't keep things forever. So in talking about what records to keep, and I mentioned paper and I also mentioned, you know, electronic, you might also have digital property. You might have, you know, something that you created digitally, whether it's music or photographs or artwork or something. Make sure you understand what rights you have to your own digital property. Make sure someone knows about it. Excuse me. There's a lot of cautions around that. That's not what the show is about tonight. But in talking about, you know, personal property that we might have, memorabilia that might be important, we actually might have some digital material that might be important. My son produces music. He's making music all the time. And that, who knows, someday could be of value. If something were to happen to him, how do we get that? How do we extract that data, digital music? Where is it? Is it on a platform that may hinder our ability to get to it? Does that platform own that music? There's all kinds of rules around these things and laws, and you'd want to make sure that you're talking to an attorney if that is the case. What are your passwords? If you're keeping things electronically, what are your user IDs and password? Quite often we're updating those frequently these days. How do you keep up with that? Do you have software that you're using? I was realizing as I was writing this tonight, I thought, what if I had my IT person come on and talk about some of this? So that might be something I do for a future show. So you can certainly let me know if you think that would be of interest through yourfinancialchoices.com, and I'll see if I could get him on to come on and talk about some security steps that we can take in protecting ourselves, not just from viruses, but from data breaches and things like that. I think that could be very interesting and something worthwhile talking about. Folks, the hour has gone so, so fast. I'm so grateful that I still can do this show and appreciate those of you who are listening. Please let your friends and family and neighbors know that we're still here at WDIY. We're still running programming, and Your Financial Choices is still bringing new content to you each and every week. And it's also available at WDIY.org, and questions can be sent to yourfinancialchoices.com. Next week, the topic is 2020, the year of the Roth IRA and Roth conversion. I'm very excited to talk about that. Coming up next, we have folk music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices. Have a great week, and thank you, Neil Heaver, for helping with the show.